Hi friends, my name is Nasra and welcome back to Unfiltered Noggin. On today's premiere episode, we'll be listening to the case of Mary Flora Bell. Have you heard of her? Mary Flora Bell was an 11-year-old serial killer, English serial murderer. She was born in Newcastle, England on May 26th of 1957. Mary Bell had a difficult childhood. She was born into a dysfunctional family. Betty Cricknett, her mother, was just 17 years old when she became pregnant with Mary, and she had no desire for her daughter. It was even reported that Betty told doctors to get that thing away from me. Betty married Billy Bell just a year after Mary was born. Since I couldn't find who Mary Bell's biological father was, dad to Mary was Billy Bell. He acted as a great father figure for her. However, Billy Bell, on the other hand, was an alcoholic. He was a burglar. He was just someone who would constantly get into fights all the time. And the police were well aware of who he was. But not long after that, Billy was detained. Betty, Billy, and Mary resided in a Scotswood neighborhood known as White Castle, and at the time, Scotswood was rife with poverty, crime, pimps, and prostitution. And I'm not sure how it is today, but that's how it was in the 60s, 70s, 50s era. The youngsters in the neighborhood would play unaccompanied at local parks, which is risky given the neighborhood's violent past. And the kids would even remain up beyond midnight. That being said, Betty worked as a prostitute, and she was frequently away from her family and kids, her daughter, Mary. Betty would also take long-duration trips to Glasgow, Scotland, to visit clients, party, and drink, and act like she doesn't have a responsibility at home. That leaves Billy Bell to take care of Mary and looked after Mary while her mother was out doing you know what. Mary was allegedly sexually assaulted by her mother's clients at the age of 4 or 5 years old. But you would really think Betty, as a mother, as a parent, she would care about something as serious like this happening to her daughter. Not at all. She did not care one bit. All she cared about was the money that her clients were paying her just to assault her daughter. And she let it happen again and again and again. Since Betty didn't want her child from the start, she tried to get rid of Mary on so many attempts. Betty, for example, tossed Mary out of a window when she was a few months old. She also forced Mary to take sleeping medications in hope that she would die from an overdose. She even tried to flee to some random stranger and hope that they would take Mary in as their own, but they refused because who is this person and their child, and this parent wants them to take their own child in. It's just not happening. Betty, on the other hand, was so adamant that one of her friends or relatives would take Mary in. But here's where it gets confusing. Mary would spend time with her grandparents a lot, and Mary's grandparents asked Betty if they could adopt Mary and take that responsibility off of Betty's hands. And Betty would go around and trying to kill her daughter, and she would try to give Mary to some random stranger. But when Mary's grandparents asked to adopt Mary, Betty denied and she said no. I just find it odd. Like, you're just trying to kill her, but then you want to give her away, but then you want to keep her. Like, what's the deal? I don't know what's going on with her. Whatever reason she's holding her, I don't know. It is what it is. With Mary growing up in a dysfunctional family, which is safe to say, Mary had trouble building friendships in school and on the playground. Nobody wanted to play with her, nor did they want to speak to her. The only friend she had was Norma Bell, another child who grew up within the same neighborhood, White Castle, as Mary. Norma would go everywhere with Mary. She was like stuck to Mary's hip. Whatever Mary said do, Norma did. Like, Mary could tell Norma jump off a building or jump off a bridge, and Norma would likely jump off a bridge or a building. It's more of like follow the leader type of situation going on. And plus, they were always seen hanging out together. Norma and Mary knew they were the outsiders whenever they're on the playground, since all the kids would run away from them. But on the playground, Norma Jean Bell, was regarded as a bully because she would frequently vent her rage with her fists. And nobody wants to be friends with a bully, especially if Norma is going to bully them. But Norma and Mary Bell did not care about what the other kids thought of them. They just knew that they had something that the other kids did not have. And they made a great friendship by bonding over the hatred and unhappiness of their upbringing. It was on May 25th of 1968. 10-year-old Mary Bell and Norma Bell went to see Martin Brown. Martin Brown was a 4-year-old boy who was playing in the woods with his pals. They asked him if he wanted sweets. They lured him into accompanying them to a abandoned house where Norma and Mary then strangled Martin to death. When Martin's parents did not see him return, they immediately called the police, and Martin's body was discovered the next day in an abandoned house. But sadly, when the first responders came to the scene and they tried to save Martin, he did not make it. Just 2 days after the incident, on May 27th, the police were summoned to a nearby nursery home in Scotswood, White Castle, that had been broken into and vandalized. When police arrived at the scene, it looked like it looks like someone had intention that they just wanted to trash the place. They just wanted to vandalize it. Nothing was stolen, but the police discovered post-it notes that said, "We did kill Martin Brown." And another message dated, "I murder and I may come back." But the police thought nothing of it. And matter of fact, they ruled it as a prank. This time, they enticed a 3-year-old named Brian Howie. Yep, Norma and Mary strike again. Brian Howie was playing with his dog at the time, and they lured him in the same way they did to Martin. They asked Brian if he wanted sweets, and Brian followed them directly to an open field. But this time, the two girls, got more inventive and creative. They started carving the letter M on his chest, which... some of the letters were letter was on his upper torso, and while the remainder was reached his lower body. They also chopped off his hair and his genitals, probably using the same scissors they used to carve the letter M into his chest. Then they strangled him and left his lifeless corpse on the ground and wandered off. Brian Howie's parents were getting concerned because their son did not return home and was getting kind of late. So the parents in the neighborhood went on a hunt for Howie, including Norma and Mary. But when the parents and the other neighbors couldn't find Brian, they phoned the cops immediately. Brian's body was located in an open field just around midnight, and despite the cutting and the mutilation of the body, cause of death was actually strangulation. The police feared that there was a child murderer who was prowling the streets of White Castle, Scotwoods, because it seemed as if someone applied little pressure when they were killing Brian Howie, and it couldn't have been an adult because an adult would still apply more pressure, so it just had to be a child killer. And because there was many similarities between Martin Brown's and Brian Howie's case, Martin Brown's case was reopened and deemed a homicide. Finally, the police started an inquiry over the course of many days, visiting numerous people's homes. It was stated and reported that the police visited 1,200 households, just asking questions, asking the parents, the siblings, and the children questions about Martin and Brian Howie. However, the authorities came to Mary Bell's and Norma Jean Bell's houses several times because of the way they answered their inquiries. It was just odd. Detective Dobson, who was head on the case at the time, was immediately sketched out on for many reasons. One of them being the way the girls acted at Brian Howie's funeral, how they were laughing, they're bursting into a fit of laughter in an environment where you don't laugh at. I mean, nobody laughs during a funeral taking place. It's odd, and people are going to be sketched out. Dobson also found it strange how their stories kept changing left to right and felt the need that they needed to be put into an interrogation room. And when Dobson brought the girls into the interrogation room, under all that pressure and hours of asking them questions back to back, Mary Bell finally snapped and confessed to killing Brian Howie and Martin Brown. It was on August 4th of 1968 when Mary Bell and Norma Jean Bell was found guilty for 2 counts of manslaughter. Now you may ask what happened to Norma Jean Bell. Well, Norma was discharged. She was a free woman. They let her go. She was released. Nothing really happened to her. However, for Mary Bell, that wasn't the case. On December 17 of 1968, Mary Bell was sentenced to life in prison until 1980, where she was released from Ashcombe Prison in England after serving 12 years. But the only way the judge allowed her to be discharged was if she changed her name, changed her identity, and was assigned a new identity. And that's very understandable. I mean, she was making headlines, news headlines. Everyone knew of her. They knew her. They knew what she did to those children. It was just horrific. And she needed to protect herself in some way by being assigned a new identity, to protect her safety, protect her privacy, and whatnot. Besides that, the judge felt that she deserved a second chance at life, hence the way she was brought up by Betty Cricknett, her mother. She just deserved a new fresh start in the judge's eye. And yeah, that sums up the case of Mary Bell, aka the 11-year-old English serial killer. Serial murder, whatever you want to call it. If you guys enjoy episodes like this, make sure you follow. And yeah, see you guys in the next episode. Bye.